Blog Talk Radio.
Special Hard Hits podcast. This is a short sports podcast. I am your host, Derek Flex Felix, here on the Hard Hits Network. And what I'm going to do here is just discuss a couple of things that are on my mind, just recent events that just happened in the world of sports on a early Saturday morning here in New York City. Day removed from about 3 inches of snow, 4 inches, in some cases more, where it took people forever to travel because of just the ineptitude of city officials for both New York and New Jersey. And that's all I'm going to say about that. All right, so let's get to it. Couple things on my mind here. First, I want to get it out of the way. I want to congratulate both Mookie Betts, or Marcus Betts, and Christian Yelich on winning their first Most Valuable Player awards. They are the MVPs for the baseball season. All the big awards went out this week. You know, you saw it with the Rookies of the Year, with Shohei Ohtani beating Andujar very handily, Miguel Andujar of the Yankees, which I did not agree with. And I'll have a little more on that after to say. I do have something to say about that. And the Rookie of the Year for the National League, I didn't even mention, was Ronald Acuna Jr. Winning very handily and very deserving winner from the Atlanta Braves. So terrific there. Cy Youngs, of course, were Jacob deGrom of the National League getting 29 out of 30 first place votes. And I think it's a joke that it wasn't unanimous. And I will have a little something on my parting shot later on that. So stay tuned for that. You don't want to miss it. And in the American League, it was, and I certainly spoke at length about this, Blake Snell, the Tampa Ace, coming the second Ray or Devil Ray pitcher to win a Cy Young Award, joining David Price, who actually turned into a playoff hero for the Red Sox, go figure, after struggling with both the Detroit Tigers and the Blue Jays. And Snell won with a few more first place votes over Justin Verlander in a race that I didn't think should have been as close, considering how well Blake Snell finished. And he had 5 more wins, too. And Verlander was on a better team. So I thought that was a joke, too. All right, so let me just talk a little bit about the two MVP winners. Great job by the voters, first off. I think they did a great job. They got it right. They got every one of these awards right. So I want to commend the voters. I know, you know, we've had issues before with the baseball writers, but I think most of them did a real good job deciphering. You know, my only gripe, aside from some of the votes that we saw, would be, how do you not have J.D. Martinez in the top three in the American League? J. J.D. Martinez, I don't care the fact that he mostly DH'd because of the Red Sox outfield. It was a terrific outfield there, a tremendous outfield. When you talk about Boogie Betts with the Gold Glove caliber in right field, and you have Jackie Bradley winning his first ever Gold Glove in center over Mike Trout, the game's best player. And then you have in the left field, Andrew Benintendi. They have the best outfield in baseball. And for as much as we can point out that they have the highest payroll and they should have won the World Series, and they did, all three of those players are homegrown. So so you could at least point to that if you're a Red Sox fan. But they're all outstanding in their own right. But J.D. Martinez, let's try to be clear about this. J.D. Martinez, the Red Sox went out and signed him. They signed him last winter. And this guy meant so much. He meant so much to their team, to their offense. If you don't think that it had a very positive impact on Mookie Betts, who suddenly put together his best season after struggling last year to finishing a runner-up for the MVP in 2016 behind Mike Trout. If you don't think that what J.D. Martinez did in his 150 games with his .330 average, with his 43 home runs and 130 RBIs had a huge impact, not just on Mookie Betts, but on that lineup, you are absolutely out of your mind nuts, okay? This is as crazy as David Ortiz, not winning an MVP when he had the better clutch statistics than Alex Rodriguez, who had a terrific year, and they both were great. But I think that Ortiz deserved to win it that year, and they gave it to A-Rod because he was the position player. And pointing to the wins above replacement, pointing to whatever you want to point to, when you have a clutch statistics, bore it out that I think Ortiz should have won at least one MVP. But so they don't always get things right. I'm not saying J.D. Martinez should have won this award. I'm not saying that at all, okay? But what I am saying is that J.D. Martinez should have been included in the top three, and I think it is an absolute joke that he wasn't. So that's, let's want to be clear on that, okay? I think he definitely belonged in the top three. No disrespect to Jose Ramirez, who was an outstanding player for the Cleveland Indians, but Jose Ramirez had a very poor finish to the season for the Indians, and he followed it up by doing absolutely nothing, did nothing in their short October, which was really short, where they held just very short against the Houston Astros. I'm not trying to put him down. I think he's a terrific player. I think he is a terrific player. But I think Jose Ramirez would even say, I didn't get it done. He had a great year. He looked like he was going to be, he looked like he could even finish first or second for the award at one point, but it just didn't materialize. And Jose Ramirez, he does finish a distant third, and he proved he could play both third base and second base, and it's become the Indians' best player. But I just don't see how he winds up in the top three when his average went from over 300 to 270 in the course of about 6 weeks or about 2 months. He still wound up with the 34 stolen bases and the 39 home runs, so he was a 30-30 guy. 105 RBI, so we're not taking that away from him, or the 106 walks. The OPS was excellent, 939. I don't think he should have been in the top three. I think that J.D. Martinez belonged in the top three. As far as the vote breakdown, Mookie Betts received 29 out of 30 first place votes, very similar to Jacob deGrom, who should have been unanimous. That one out of touch to San Diego writer. And I might touch on him a little bit at the end of the show. Decided to vote for Max Scherzer with his 300 strikeouts and with the more wins, with the 8 more wins that he had on the Boston Nets. I can accept one rider voting for Mike Trout and giving him a first place vote, because Mike Trout is an unbelievable player, and if he didn't miss a little bit of time, I think he probably would have won an award. I have to be honest about that. Like, Mike Trout is an awesome player. He is sensational, and anytime somebody votes for Mike Trout, if they want to vote for him as a first place guy, I got no issue with that at all. If you are gonna put together a first place vote, and it's not gonna be Mookie Betts in the year that he had, then Mike Trout would be the way to go. Especially with what he accomplished still. You know, he didn't play as many games, played 140 games. He's missed some time the last couple of years, and it's just cost him. But he wound up with 39 home runs still, 79 RBIs, 24 steals, hit .312, 122 walks, a 1,088 OPS. Yeah, his highest OPS actually was 2017 when he missed a whole bunch of games with the injury, 114 games, and he had 33 home runs, and looked like he was on his way to maybe possibly 50 home runs. So, and his wins above replacement was 10.2. I don't like to go too crazy over the WAR statistic, but you know, you can't say enough about Mike Trout, the fact that he's been a two-time MVP, that he's been a runner-up for this award now four times. So when it really comes down to is this, ever since he's been a full-time player at the age of 19, 20 years old, every year he's finished the MVP in the top five, top four, fourth place in 2017. And he missed a bunch of games, and every other year, either first or second. So it's a credit to him for the consistency, and it's a credit to what kind of special talent and player he is. So full marks to Michael Nelson Trout, Jersey Mike with the one first place vote. Vote points were Mookie Betts 410, 28. I'm sorry. The other first place vote, by the way, did go to J.D. Martinez. So there were no first place votes for Jose Ramirez, but there was one first place vote for J.D. So somebody did actually think that J.D. belonged in the top three, and a credit to them as well. When you look at J.D.'s offensive season, how could he not belong in that top three? No disrespect. You had 208 points for Jose Ramirez, 198 for J.D., Alex Bregman, who has certainly established himself as one of the best players in the American League in the sport at third base, 192 points. And then Francisco Lindor, Ramirez's double play teammate at second base, 169. Matt Chapman was a seventh-place finisher. Matt Chapman is a great defensive player. All right, he's a Gold Glove winner. I'm just curious how he wound up with finishing seventh, while his teammate Chris "Crush" Davis, with 48 home runs, doubled the amount of home runs, doubled the amount of RBIs, basically with 123. I know he only had 247. How Chris Davis wound up eighth, and Chapman wound up seventh. Are we putting too much into the analytics here, into the metrics? I'm thinking that we are, when Chris Davis gets 41 vote points total and Matt Chapman gets 141. I think that's ridiculous. I think Chris Davis is the biggest reason that the A's were in the playoffs. So, Blake, by the way, 9-10 with Blake Snell and Justin Verlander. So, there you go. If you want local flavor, Aaron Judge was 12th. Former MVP Jose Altuve was 13th. Of course, Judge and Altuve missed time. So, of course, that hurt their candidacy. Yeah, there's always, like, you know, when you look at these lists, there's always guys who get votes that you just can't believe got votes. Like Aaron Hicks. Somebody gave him a vote. He got a point. Steve Gregorius wound up with 3 points. Jed Lowry wound up with 3 points. These are really good players, but come on. Edwin Diaz got 5 points. That'd be a remarkable closer for the Mariners. Whit Merrifield, 6 points out of the Rivals. I don't know. I rest my case. I don't know what the heck's going on. Let's go to the National League. What I didn't even highlight, the season for Mookie Betts. So let's just do it. The batting title with the .346 batting average, the 32 home runs out of the leadoff spot, the 80 RBIs, 129 runs scored, tied with Francisco Lindor for the best in the I think that would be the majors. Yeah, nobody else came close to that. All right, so they, those guys were right there. They tied for the most. 180 hits, 80 RBIs, 30 stolen bases, so 30-30 for him. And wound up with a 1,078 OPS. What was his wins above replacement? Why don't we just take a look real quick, 10.9. So he's a little better than Mr. Trout. All right. So congratulations, kudos to him. To the National League, Christian Yelich certainly deserved to win the award. He went 29 for 30, 415 points, won pretty much going away. Javier Baez was a distant second, getting most of the second-place votes. I think he got like 19 second-place votes. Arenado got 3 second-place votes. And then there were some second-place votes that were kind of, shall we say, staggered. So, but certainly Christian Yelich pulling the win at the end, deserved to win the award. Wound up with more home, 2 more home runs, 36 home runs to Baez, 34. Wound up with 1 less RBI than Baez's and a leading 111. Both Yelich and Arenado tied for 110 for second. Hitting .326, certainly a batting title, batting champ. Certainly, he carried the Brewers into the playoffs. As good as that lineup was, and I think Javier Baez was probably more valuable to his team, considering how flawed the Cubs were. But when you have a player like Yelich Carrick, but he did what he did over the last 5-6 weeks. He was the clear-cut winner. He finished with 1,000 OPS right on the nail. Baez was .881. That's because Baez doesn't get on base. Baez, though, he played 3 different positions, had to play a lot of short because of what happened with Addison Russell. I don't know what the Cubs are planning to do there with the suspension, with the whole problem. That issue off the baseball field, it's inexcusable right there with Javier Baez and his it was ex-girlfriend or ex-wife. That's terrible. It's inexcusable. So I'm not going to say anything else. I'm clear on that. Arenado was 3rd. Freddie Freeman was 4th. And here's your interesting finish there. Jacob DeGrom, Cy Young winner, at his 5th with 141 points. He was the other guy who got the first place vote. Somebody gave him a first place vote. So that's the only reason Yelich wasn't unanimous. I think Yelich deserves to be unanimous. I don't see how you could give a first place vote to Jacob DeGrom when he pitched for the New York Mets, weren't even a .500 ball club. If there wasn't a Yelich, if there wasn't a Yelich carrying his team and the statistics were a little down, I think Jacob DeGrom could have merited more consideration for this award. We've seen pitchers win the award before. Roger Clemens did it in 1986. We've seen Clayton Kershaw do it. Maybe even Verlander might have said. I'll have to check that. I'll could cross-reference that. So there have been moments where it's been the pitcher that's won both. There was even a reliever who did it in the 80s. So, making some points. One of the guys that I really liked when he was hot, he was carrying the cards all the way back into the competition. He was hitting all sorts of home runs in the second half. Matt Carpenter, he wanted to finish in a distant 9th. Because he cooled down. By the way, 6th retired with Goldschmidt, Lorenzo Cain, and how valuable he was to the Brewers, his defense. And yeah, he gets for high average and he steals bases, not going to blow you away offensively. Trevor Story, Yeah, I thought Trevor Story might have taken away some votes from Nolan Arenado, but he did at shortstop for Colorado. Taft, by the way, missed $1 million max Scherzer, but he finished 10th. He didn't get any first place votes here. And let's see, what was the most random guy? Let's just pick a couple of random guys that got points or vote points that probably should have. Nick Markakis. That would be one. That would be the guy, I would say. Just because Markakis had a really good year. He was an all-star for the first time and plays excellent defense, but I don't see how he merits his vote. I do see Max Muncy listed. I see Justin Turner. Guys that are very well-liked and guys that work very well. Anthony Rendon. Acuna. Oh, Acuna. His big rookie year. Eugenio Suarez. Yeah, it's too bad that Eugenio Suarez plays on a miserable team like the Reds because he could have finished higher. And he certainly had a really good year. Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo finished, had a great second half, but Jesus Aguilar carried the Blues in the first half, so Aaron Nola got votes too. So that's your voting results. Congratulations to the winners. It is interesting to note that you had two first-time winners for the MVP, and Mookie Betts and Christian Yelich. And you also had two first-time winners for Cy Young and Blake Snell for the Rays and Jacob DeGrom for the New York Metropolitans, who also won a Rookie of the Year in 2014. So it is not often that you get first-time winners for both MVP and Cy Young in each league. So that's a little something that you we could check on and see when's the last time that happened. All right, so definitely enjoyable. And I want to go and I want to do a little breakdown here. And I talked a little bit about it. I want to talk about the American League. I want to talk about this voting again. 17 for Snell, 13 for Verlander, 169 to 154, almost like a boxing match, basically, a split decision, basically. 7.5 WAR wins above replacement, 6.2. 21 wins to 16 wins. A 1.89 earned run average to a 2.52 earned run average. The only category, the only thing he wasn't better at, complete games, Verlander had a one complete game shutout. Not zip. Innings pitched, 182/3 and 31 starts, so three less starts. 214 innings for Verlander. And strikeouts, 290 strikeouts for Justin Verlander, 221 for Blake Snell. I think I'm pretty fair when it comes to things. I'm pretty objective when it comes to these things. And I just think that it shouldn't have been that close. I think that Snell deserved more first place votes than he got. And I understand the respect that they have for Justin Verlander, but I think that it should have been more like 25 first place votes to 5, or maybe more like 23 to 7. I think it should have been something like that. That's how I feel about that. All right. And El Cy Young, I mean, I talked about this briefly. I think Aaron Nola probably could have finished closer to Scherzer than he did. I also thought Josh Hader could have finished in the top five, even though I'm not going to argue against Freeland and Corbin finishing where they finished. I want to just make one point here, since I have the floor, just on the first place vote that Scherzer got. Scherzer won 8 more games. He didn't have as high as but above replacement. Noah actually had the highest but above replacement, actually. Go figure. He actually had a lower ERA than Scherzer. They both made 33 starts. Scherzer threw 8 more innings. And Noah had 3.2/3 more than Jacob DeGrom. DeGrom 269 strikeouts, only 10 home runs allowed. Scherzer, 300 strikeouts, level only 224. I think Max Scherzer is a great, great pitcher, a dominant pitcher, who has been worth every penny. I'm not a big fan of giving all those kind of contracts, but he's proven to be the exception. So you have to give him full credit. To the one writer in San Diego, the old geezer who decided he wanted to give him the first place vote because of because he's old school and he thinks that wins is the most important thing. Look, you're off your rocker, man. I mean, you really are. Steve Summers, actually, WFN Steve Summers, who I've been listening to since I was, what, 16, 17 years old, the Rangers Cup run, Captain Midnight, still on WFN in New York City. He's got to be like 72 or 73 years old. He gave the guy an opportunity. Come on. And the guy has no sense of humor. I don't have any issue with Steve Summers with a little bit of Gallo's humor. Had a little bit of Gallo's humor asking if the writer decided to hang up the phone because John Maffey, you know, just couldn't take Steve Summers' humor. I mean, and this is how it went. Not for Washington. Where would you think Culver's Elizabeth Rice? John Maffey is with the San Diego Union Tribune. Can you look at yourself in the mirror, John? That was his question. Can I? Absolutely. And then, of course, Steve went into a stick. No. You're looking for 15 minutes of fame and attention. And if you listen to him, you know, and you listen to the interview, you know he was kidding. You know he was having a little bit of fun. And he just cut him off to give his interviews over there and say goodbye. So that was the interview. And I don't understand. I don't understand why. Why even go on if you're not gonna be able to take it? I mean, Steve wasn't being that critical. He wasn't going after him. He was being nice. I've seen some write-ups from nerds, in particular the nerd that writes for the New York Post. Yeah, I read his columns every once in a while. Andrew Marchand occasionally has some good columns, but reading him and seeing what he said about Steve Summers, that was one of the most ridiculous articles that I have ever seen. And I think I'm going to send him an email and tell him what I think. I'll try to keep it respectful. I'll try to keep it professional. I just think that he's a wannabe Phil Mustick. And Andrew, you know, I think you're looking for a story that's just not there. And, I mean, some of your stuff is good. You know, stuff on Marv Albert, that he maybe phased out as a double-line play-by-play guy for TNT, which would be a bummer. But, you know, Marv's got only a couple years left of his contract. That was a good story. I mean, he does write some good stories. He doesn't write old junk, old crap like Phil Mustick, who I like to call Schmucknick, because he's from the Staten Island area, or Satan's Island, as I like to refer to this place. But Andrew, I think you were looking for a story, and the papers made a big deal out of it. But I'm siding with Steve Summers on this. I mean, anybody who listens to him, I've called him up. You know the guy. He was just kidding around, pushing a little bit of buttons. Who doesn't do it? I do it as well to my friends. JPG could attest to that. Brian Sanhor could attest to it. Robert retirement, Dave is kind of tough to it. So can my brother, JNF, Justin Fields, kind of tough to it. So have a little bit of sanity. Now that is what I'm going to say. So I just don't get it. So I did have to talk about that. And as far as the wins thing, yeah, sure, so 21-22 games. To the Browns 10 because he was on the Mets. Yeah, I could see maybe giving Scherzer a first place vote. He won 18 games. His ERA wasn't as good as Aaron Nola's. He had the 300 strikeouts. Yeah, it's almost like some of these voters just go for the strikeouts. They go, you know, they went for a lander. They went for a lander on some of those outs, and I thought that was ridiculous. That's going to do it for my baseball take. Actually, you know, I want to say one other thing. And this is to all the writers who basically just screwed over Miguel Andujar. I'm not saying, I just want to be clear here. I thought that Ohtani deserved to win the award. I did. So I don't want people to get the wrong idea. He did deserve to win this. He did deserve to win the Rookie of the Year with the 50 innings pitched, the 3.23 ERA, and the home runs, which almost messed up even though he played a lot less games. 285, 22 home runs, to the 297. Andrew Harris' year was terrific. 297, 27 home runs, 83 runs. But he wound up with how many RBIs? Wound up with like 90-plus RBIs. So what I want to say is this. Ridiculous. It's just unbelievable that the vote breakdown was that lopsided. And this is the problem with baseball writers. The fact that he got 25 first place votes, and Andujar got 5. That's embarrassing. That is embarrassing. It's an insult. It's insulting baseball fans. It's an insult. And I see a lot of Yankee fans say that Andujar got screwed and deserved to win it. I understand why Ohtani won. Take a look at his weather dog replacement compared to Andujar. Andujar was an all offensive guy. Needs to work a little bit on the defensive aspect of things out there. And I don't know if Gleyber Torres took away some votes, but Gleyber didn't get many votes anyway. I just don't get it. I wake up. Open your eyes. Really. And that's all I'm going to add with regards to that. Now, last thing I want to do is talk about the latest Rangers loss to their kryptonite in Brooklyn to the New York Islanders. A final score of 7-5. Look, I certainly, the Rangers, in my post, I was pretty tough in my post on it. You can go to newyorkpuck.com and you can check it out, newyorkpuck.com for Rangers and Devils coverage. And occasionally some of my hard hits columns on the NHL. Might do another one for this weekend, maybe for Sunday. So now, and I just want to say this. Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter who the players are for these two sides. I mean, when the Rangers play the Islanders, it's the Islanders' Stanley Cup. And now the Islanders are actually more competitive because they have Barry Trotz coaching them. And Barry Trotz has accountability, and so does LeBron. It's a good partnership. And Barry Trotz will not put up with crap, just like David Quinn doesn't put up with anything. He's not afraid to make examples. He benched Matthew Barcell for the final 8 minutes of a game that the Islanders were leading, which eventually got cut to 6-5. Barcell took a stupid penalty. He could have gotten more than a one minor for the punches that he threw. And he benched him. So look, I understand what Toronto's trying to establish there, but this is what happens when the Rangers go up against the Generals. When the Rangers go up against the New York Islanders, they turn mere mortals into superstars. When Thomas Greiss is now taking the place of Yaro Halak, outperforming Henrik Lundqvist, making save after save when the Rangers were on that power play down 4-3, a game which they led 2-0 on goals 32 seconds apart by Kreider and Claesson. And then the Islanders, what do? They score 6 out of the next 7 goals and eventually go up 6-3. When Anthony Beauvillier, who had 1 goal, 1 point, 1 stinking damn fucking point the whole year, the whole season so far, in what, the 19 games or whatever it is, 20 games, whatever it is, scores a hat trick. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's like watching Blake Caldwell score all those shorthanded goals. It's like Viktor Kozlov with his 5. Did he score 5 goals? I was at that game at the Garden where he scored like 4 goals or 5 goals with the Islanders. It's the same script every fucking time, every damn time. It's the same thing. Damn, the Rangers are gonna have tough games. But could you at least compete? Could you at least compete defensively? Could you pick up a stick? Could you knock some guys down in front instead of letting them get every freaking tip and redirection on Lundqvist and scoring? It is an absolute joke. When that one power play that they had, and it was an awful call on Brady Shea, where Shea was put to the box for a garbage call. And this is after O'Halloran made the mistake, and he admitted it, made the mistake of calling a double minor on Mika's advantage for high sticking late in the first period when the game was tied, when it was really an Islander stick. When it was Philpola, actually. I loved Quinn's response afterwards, you know, about the apology. And what was the response? Whoopity-do. It was almost like they were called whoopity-damn-do. And you know what? I like that. I like that about Quinn. He's got a little bit of personality. He's tough, but he's got some personality too. But very disappointing performance. I thought Tony D'Angelo was very bad. Especially when he just let Beauvillier sneak behind them for the first redirect. Him and Shea gave up too much gap there to get them back in the game. And then the game was tied up. And it fell apart. It fell apart. I mean, they started off well, which they never do, and they still have not won a game in Brooklyn. Can you just blow that place up? Really? Just blow it up. And I can't for the life of me understand why the New York Rangers and Islanders, they're not playing the other game at Nassau Coliseum. They're not one of those games in Nassau Coliseum. Why not? You think that would be the logical thing to do, is have them play at the Coliseum. But no. And I think it sucks that they only play 4 times as well. Even though if the Rangers played them 5 times or 6 times, they probably lose all 6 anyway. They haven't won a game since the beginning of 2016-17 season, opening night. It's 9 losses in a row. And no, I don't count the brownie points that they get in shootouts or overtime. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Chris Kreider, 2 more goals. Played very well, up to 10 goals, playing really well, looking like the player that I always thought he could be, and a lot of fans have, and like what he said after a game, seems like more of a leader. Kevin Hayes, he was taking shots every time. He had a shorthanded goal, 4 goals on the year, only 12 points, but I'll tell you, the effort is there from Kevin Hayes. Had about 9 attempts. Neil Pionk, I know he needs work defensively. not the strongest guy when it comes to getting the puck out. He's a minus 9 or 10. But another power play point for him. Also, he always hits guys, blocks shots, does a lot of good things out there. And he's just got to learn. You got to keep playing him. So those were some of the – those were positives. There were a lot of positives. Lukas was taken out after the second period. And the coach said, you know, not because – not anything to do with him. The defense was just lousy in front. They did a lousy job. Negatives, Mika's manager, a no-show. Yeah, he got one lousy assist on a – secondary assist on a power play goal by Chris Kreider, but didn't do much. Yeah, he was really invisible. One other positive, Filipino, second straight game with a goal on a rebound. That's good stuff right there. Yeah, he looks like he's getting more confident. One other note, this is after, this is a day later, the Rangers do make a trade. They trade the perimeter player, Soft and Softer, Hostess, sponsored by Hostess, and Carvel, Ryan Spooner, with only 2 friggin' points after 16 and 20 games last with their AV. Too much on the perimeter. He gets dealt, swapped, traded to the Oilers, the Rangers' favorite trading partner, for former Islander, 5th overall pick, or 4th overall pick, Ryan Strome. Similar disappointing player that once put up 50 points in his second full year. I don't think that's the worst move to make. I mean, why not? I mean, he makes a little bit less money. He's not making $4 million. He's making $3.1 million. They both are eligible to come unrestricted. Spooner and Strome in the summer of 2020. Strome's also a right-handed shot. Could play a little bit of penalty kill. And, you know, they could slide a bit on the fourth line. They could do that. You know, I read that, you know, maybe he'll take the place of McLeod. You know what? Based on what I've seen from Vinny Letteri, I don't think Vinny Letteri should play. Yeah, Vinny Letteri works hard. Yeah, I'm tired of Vinny Letteri. What does Vinny Letteri add? He doesn't add much. I mean, he's still got 0 fucking points. He doesn't hit anybody. I mean, yeah, he plays hard, but I mean, I'd probably have McLeod going up at this point. Call somebody else up for Vinny Letteri, please. I've had enough of the Vinny Letteri experiment. He's not an NHL player. Just get him out of here. Seriously. I'm glad they got rid of Spooner. Good fucking riddance. The Rangers do host the New York Islanders, their kryptonite, on Turkey Eve. Back-to-back situation after they take on the Dallas Stars on Tuesday. And later tonight, on 7 o'clock, on a stupid 7 o'clock game on Saturday night, they will host the Florida Panthers. Expect a lot of shots because these teams defensively are not great. Expect a lot of shots on goal. Expect the goalies to be tested often. Florida does have a better offense, so they've been playing better lately. They did get taken on the chin at Columbus. I would expect them to be a lot better tonight. I would expect them to be Lundqvist against Lou, Berlalongo. Alexander Barkov, watch out for him. Watch out for the daddy. You have getting dadded off. Watch out for Eric Ekblad. Can somebody page visit Trochuk and tell him the season started? I got him on my fantasy team. All right, so Keith Yandel, of course, for Voyager having another good start. So that's today. Devils, winners of 2 straight, a 1 o'clock game. Normally 1 o'clock game there against the Dallas Stars. So that's an early one there, early bird special for the Devils in Newark. That's going to do it for this abbreviated edition. I think I pretty much said everything that I needed to say. I got my parting shot in. I think that it's a joke when it comes to some of these voters, and I think it's just pathetic that the New York Rangers cannot beat the Islanders. So I'm not too happy about that, but what do you expect? I could be talking about the Knicks. I forgot they even played last night. Apparently, blew a 19-point lead. What else is new? Coach trying out all different kinds of lineups. you know, I'm not going to be too critical of Fisdale at all. I understand what the fuck he's doing right now. That's going to do it for this show. Football picks tomorrow. You know, I will do some tomorrow. Why not? I heard there was a rumor going around that a big man, certain big man, is interested in doing a show. Well, if that's, I'm going to be doing a show tomorrow, so it's going to be earlier. So I'll see if we could put the band back together for one night at least, all right? Thank you for tuning in. Check out our podcast. Download on iTunes, and see you all later. Have a enjoy your Saturday. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you all soon. Peace.